A large backdrop depicts figures painted in a classical style. The backdrop hangs across an auditorium stage. Patrons sit in front of the stage as a man in a tuxedo approaches a microphone. Subtitles appear. Ladies and gentlemen, we are very pleased to welcome you to the world premiere of part one of the newest film from a great favorite of ours here at Loquasto, Mr. Steve Zissou. A brief Q&A will immediately follow the screening. Thank you. A formally dressed audience fills the room. The lights go down. On a screen, text reads, Osiri Draculius presents. Now, pieces of coral frame blue water as yellow letters appear. The Life Aquatic. Above the letters, five divers holding flashlights become visible as they come closer. Now, the image of a middle-aged man wearing a red knit cap appears by more text, with Steve Zissou. Text, Adventure Number 12, The Jaguar Shark, Part 1.
The Obiamiwe Peninsula, a remote and fascinating region teeming with extraordinary marine life.
Steve speaks to the camera.
We chose its mysterious waters as the Belafonte's next destination. In preparation for our voyage, the members of Team Zissou gathered at my oceanographic observatory here on Peshispata Island. This was to be our most ambitious adventure to date, and ultimately a tragic one. Our team included Esteban Duplantier, chief diver, our senior statesman, my closest colleague for 27 years. Klaus Daimler, 40, engineer, calm, collected, German. Vikram Ray, 28, cameraman, born on the Ganges. Bobby Ogata, 22, frogman. Renzo Pietro, 45, editor, soundman. Vladimir Wolodarsky, 33, physicist, original score composer. Anne-Marie Sakowitz, 25, script girl. Pele Dos Santos, 30, safety expert.
An image shows an elegant woman.
Eleanor Zissou, my wife, vice president of the Zissou Society. We had also invited seven marine science students from the University of North Alaska to accompany us as unpaid interns in exchange for school credit.
Text, entry in the logbook of the Belafonte by Captain Zissou.
October 12th, Esteban and I explore the blue reefs beyond the peninsula.
Steve kisses Esteban's bald head.
Fluorescent snapper unexpectedly appear in the shallows, extremely rare at this depth.
Underwater, Esteban poses by a reef while a huge school of brightly colored fish swims behind him. In the auditorium, the audience watches attentively. On screen, blood churns in the water's surface by the Belafonte.
There's your gun.
Klaus looks at the water.
Steve! Steve! There's Esteban!
Is that thing rolling?
Vikram!
Subtitles appear. Encounter with highly abnormal shark-like fish, 10 meters in length, unfamiliar dorsal features, spots all over it. I shot it dorsally with a homing dart. Esteban was eaten.
Check the scanning monitor! Start tracking before it goes too deep!
Esteban was bitten?
Eaten!
Is he dead?
Esteban was eaten!
He was swallowed whole?
No! Jude! Check the scanning monitor!
He's got hydrogen psychosis. Crazy eye.
Steve, we think you got crazy eye.
Get him out of the fucking water.
Esteban! Esteban!
Pele throws oxygen tanks into the water, and the crew watches Steve screaming. Klaus jumps into the water by Steve. In the auditorium, the audience watches. Above them, Steve and his crew watch from a luxury box. Steve's expression is inscrutable. Later, Steve sits with the MC behind a desk, facing the audience. Many people have left the auditorium. A man stands. As he speaks, two more people leave, and then the MC translates.
Was it a deliberate choice never to show the jaguar shark?
Steve leans toward the mic.
No, I dropped the camera.
No, ho perso la macchina da presa, mi è caduta.
Why are they laughing?
The MC points to a young man with a mustache sitting in a balcony.
L'infondo.
The young man wears a pilot's uniform and a string tie.
Yes, what's next for Team Zissou?
Well, that was only part one. It's a cliffhanger. Now I'm going to go hunt down that shark, or whatever it is, and hopefully kill it.
Steve turns to the MC.
I don't know how yet. Maybe dynamite.
You don't know what it is?
No, I've never seen anything like it before in my life.
You say it is a jaguar shark. That's the title of your film.
It was coming right at us. I just said the first two words that came into my head.
A woman stands.
That's an endangered species at most. What would be the scientific purpose of killing it?
Steve considers the question for a moment, then shrugs.
Revenge.
Now, a woman with a flamboyant hat waits in a grand hallway as people exit the theater. Steve walks along with the MC, his team trailing behind him. Some wear red knit caps.
Bravo! What fun!
Steve, I'd like to introduce you to Antonia Cook. She's the new head of the Film Society. You must be so excited.
I hope so. You think it went okay?
No. Congratulations. Seriously.
Thanks. I wish it didn't require the seriously, but thank you.
Well, I just don't think they got it.
You know Larry Amin, chairman of Saudi Film.
Oh, yeah, hi. Nice to see
you. Harry and I were just discussing our financial predicament. I thought it would be nice if the three of us rode out to the party together, just the three of us.
Why? Does Larry have that kind of spending bread to invest?
The king's back.
$500 million capitalization.
Subsidies.
Captain Zissou, can I get a shot of you of Captain Hennessy?
Where?
Across the room is a tall man whose evening jacket is decorated with colorful medals.
Make it quick. Hey, Stephen, how's everything going with your, what are you calling it, leopard? Jaguar shark. Jaguar shark. Exactly. I love it. Tell me something. Does it actually exist?
You know, Allie, I don't want to give away the ending.
Good man. Oh, here comes our girl.
Eleanor climbs stairs wearing a beautiful gown. Hennessy walks up to her.
You're the most ravishing creature that I've ever seen in my life.
Hello, Skinny.
Hello, Eleanor.
Is that a new merit badge?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, it is. I just became a knight. In Portugal, the Presidente gave a special ball.
Don't be nice to Allie. He's my nemesis.
Later.
How could you lay that slick faggot?
Well, I was in love with him at the time.
Yeah, he's charismatic.
How are you feeling?
I'm right on the edge. I don't know what comes next.
Wait here, I'll be right back.
Eleanor steps away. A beautiful woman approaches.
I just wanted to say hello. Hi.
Hey, baby.
He tries to kiss her, but she recoils.
I said I wanted to say hello. I didn't say I wanted you to touch me.
Eleanor brings him a drink and a pill.
I'm here with my wife. Eleanor, this is Mendiza.
Do you really want to put me through this?
Now, an old broadcast plays on a TV.
People say Eleanor is the brains behind Team Zissou. What is Steve?
On TV, younger Steve sits with Esteban.
It's the Zissou.
At the party, present-day Steve looks mournfully at the image of his late friend. He touches him on the TV monitor. Klaus approaches with a young boy.
Steve, this is my little nephew, Werner. He wanted to meet you.
How you doing, Werner?
He brought you a present.
It's a fish resembling a seahorse in a bag of water.
A crayon polyfish. Wow. Interesting specimen.
Steve looks tenderly at Werner and shakes the boy's hand.
Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
Steve.
Klaus pulls Steve aside.
You don't look too good.
Steve musses his white hair.
Who's this?
Steve, there's a bloke over there wants a word with you.
What do you need, old man?
Subtitles. Would you sign this, please? Steve signs a lobby card for one of his old movies. More subtitles. And this. The man holds a large stack of lobby cards. Steve signs some. Each of the images shows Steve and his team encountering dangerous animals in exotic locations, such as an octopus underwater and a big cat in a jungle.
How many of these do you have? All right, look, just forge the rest of them yourself, all right?
Subtitles, but I could have done that at home.
Get out of here.
He obeys. Now, Eleanor sits on a balcony with the Belafonte docked in a harbor beyond. She pops a pill in her mouth and takes a drink. She turns to Steve, who waves. Later, Steve's crew exits the party as a group. He walks arm in arm with Eleanor as he slips on his red knit cap. Most of the crew members wear their caps as well. They walk past a crowd.
Hey, Steve! How come you're not sitting shiva for your friend Esteban?
Steve turns to him with an angry look.
What'd you say?
Who are you gonna kill in part two?
The man snaps a photo. Steve lunges at him. Steve and the fan brawl until Klaus pulls Steve away. Eleanor calmly exits the scene. Steve touches his busted lip while his crew members fight with onlookers. Noticing that the bag with the fish is leaking, Steve grabs an empty glass from a passerby and pours the water and the fish into it. He holds it high as he continues on. Night aboard the Belafonte. Pele plays an acoustic guitar and sings while Renzo records him. Guests attend a party on the deck. The Belafonte is a long metal ship painted blue and white with a command tower and exhaust pipe protruding from the center of the deck. A yellow submersible is prominent. The young pilot from the screening stands on deck. In a cabin, Steve's producer, Draculius, speaks with Steve while Eleanor plays solitaire and various crew members mill about.
Larry Armin's flying back to Mecca tonight to see if he can make the numbers work. He should have an answer for us in 10 days.
Tell him we need to know by Sunday.
Why would I do that, my darling?
To call his bluff, damn it. To light a fire under his ass.
My darling, we haven't made a hit documentary in 9 years. Let's not fuck with Larry Amin.
Doubles.
Explain it to him, will you, Eleanor?
Screwdriver. He understands. Amin needs to make a projection of the world grosses to see if he can get a tax break and run it through his output deal.
I don't understand, but I can tell it's bullshit.
A fuse blows and the lights go out.
What the hell is...
Steve, play the blackjack and the red queen.
Steve eyes Eleanor's cards as the lights flicker back on.
Well, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go on an overnight drunk, and in 10 days, I'm going to set out to find the shark that ate my friend and destroy it. Anyone that would care to join me is more than welcome.
He exits the cabin to join the party on deck.
Captain Zisu, I'm sorry to bother you. I'm Ned Plimpton.
Okay, man.
Ned is the pilot.
My mother's Catherine Plimpton.
That gets Steve's attention. He turns to Ned.
Your kid?
No.
How is she?
She died last month.
I'm sorry. Shit. She was...
Steve looks the younger man up and down, eyeing his immaculate blue uniform.
I've heard of you.
Steve puts a hand on Ned's arm, pulling him aside to a more private area. Steve shifts uncomfortably.
I don't know if it's true or not, by the way. Do you?
No, I don't.
I haven't heard from her in 30 years. I guess it's too late now. She never contacted me, you know.
Yes, I see.
You're supposed to be my son, right?
I don't know. But I did want to meet you. Just in case.
I appreciate that.
They shake hands, then look into each other's eyes for a long moment.
I'll be right back. Don't go away.
Now, Steve walks purposefully past party guests, climbing stairs to the upper deck and heading toward the small elevated observation tower affixed to the bow. The railings of the ship are lined with small decorative lights, giving the deck the warm glow of an intimate club, and these lights complement those dotting the nearby shoreline. Just before reaching the observation tower, Steve looks back to see no one else is nearby. In the tower, he lights a joint and takes a deep drag in slow motion. Now, he returns to Ned, who remains exactly where he was.
Sorry about that. You caught me with one foot off the merry-go-round tonight.
Oh, that's all right. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I want to thank you for talking to me.
We'll find a way, mate.
I know we will.
I just had a lovely chat with Cy Perlman. He wants to make a big to-do of the Oceanographic Explorer article, possibly give you the front cover, so do be nice to this girl, Miss Winslet Richardson, won't you? Apparently she worships you, and we dearly need the press.
Oh, Siri, this is probably my son, Ned. We just met.
How delightful.
Later.
Anyway, his mother just died. Plus, we're having some problems, and I just think it'd be a very special opportunity for all of us, especially him. He needs this deal.
Okay, bring him over.
Well, he's right here.
Eleanor turns to see Ned standing nearby. She extends her hand.
I'm sorry. How do you do?
Now, Steve and Ned stand on the control tower's highest deck. Steve hands Ned a joint.
So what do you do?
I'm a pilot. Air Kentucky.
Air Kentucky?
Co-pilot, actually.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
We hop out of Louisville.
Well, sure, there's some pretty country in those parts. Landlocked.
I have to tell you, I've been a member of the Zisu Society since I was 11.
He shows a ring on his hand.
Well, I'll be damned. Look at that.
It reads Zisu Society. Steve offers the joint.
What killed us? Frankly, I've been a nod. I don't usually try grass.
Ned loads tobacco into a pipe and lights the bowl. Now, Steve speaks to the camera.
Let me tell you about my boat.
A backdrop rises, revealing a cutaway view of the side of the Belafonte. It is full size, with people moving in rooms.
The Belafonte was a long-range sub-hunter during the Second World War, which we bought from the U.S. Navy for $900,000. This is my mentor, Lord Mandrake.
He's dead now.
The view slides from room to room.
The sauna was designed by an engineer from the Chinese space program, and we keep a Swedish masseuse on staff. Here's where we do all our different science projects and experiments and so on. This is the kitchen, which contains probably some of the most technologically advanced equipment on the ship.
Vladimir ices a birthday cake.
Eleanor put together a top-notch research library for us with a complete first edition set of the Life Aquatic Companion series. We process our own rushes and keep a cutting room on board so we can do an assembly while we're shooting.
I can't find them.
Once again, please.
Vikram records in a sound booth.
This is the observation bubble, which I thought up in a dream, actually.
Below the boat swims a pair of dolphins with cameras on their backs.
Two albino scouts swim with the ship. They're supposedly very intelligent, although I've never seen any evidence of it. Here's the engine room. The bearing casings aren't supposed to look like that, but we can't afford to fix them this year. Topside, we've got the bridge, the mini-sub, an old chopper, and all kinds of radar and sonar and underwater movie gadgets.
What happened to Jacqueline?
She didn't really love me.
The name Jacqueline is crossed out on the side of the mini-sub, with the words Deep Search scrawled beneath. Lights fade to black on the cutaway view of the Belafonte. Now, a sign outside a building reads Explorers Club. Inside an office, Steve looks at a painting.
Lord Mandrake.
He and Ned reach a painting of Esteban.
It's wonderful. Very lifelike.
I'm not crazy about it.
Next, they walk past a model ship to a painting of Hennessy.
This guy's a big-time asshole. We were roommates at the academy. He used to be married to Eleanor. He hogs up all the grant money.
In the club's bar.
You think you'll want to change your name?
Ned?
No, not the Ned part, unless you want to. I meant your last name. I thought you might like to let me give you mine.
Ned Zisu.
Ned Zisu, exactly. Or if you want to, you can change the first part, too. I would have named you Kingsley, if I'd had a say in it.
Kingsley. I don't know. Maybe I'll stick with Ned for now.
Sure, that's okay. Anyway, I'll order you some correspondence stuff.
A waiter arrives.
What are you doing? I ordered the wine. Pour it over here, please. He doesn't know anything about wine.
Steve samples the wine and nods at the waiter. Subtitles appear. Have you seen him lately? He's gotten creepy.
Are those assholes talking about me?
Men talk at a nearby table. Subtitles. He wears a gay little earring, and he drunkenly tried to hit on my 15-year-old cousin at a French disco. She was terrified. What happened to him? His last movies are just total... Finally, the men notice that Steve has walked over to their table. Later, outside.
People say when someone says something like that about you, it's because they're jealous. But it still hurts. It hurts bad.
That man was damn rude. He can go straight to hell.
Steve pulls the earring from his ear, then tosses it onto the street. Ned walks over to reclaim the earring. Steve holds out his hand, and Ned places the earring in Steve's palm. Ned takes a seat on the pavement beside Steve.
How did she die, by the way, your mother?
She took her own life. She took sleeping pills.
Why would she do that?
Well, she was in a great deal of pain, you know.
Oh. I see, yeah. You know, my best friend just got killed. Esteban.
Yeah, I know. The old man.
Let's go to my island.
Well, I have to be back in Kentucky on Thursday.
Thursday? Okay. Okay.
A small water plane glides low in the air over water, passing a number of rocky islands. In a yellow lighthouse tower, Pele sings and plays his acoustic guitar. Text appears on screen. Zizu Compound, Peshispada Island. The plane flies past a group of buildings surrounded by a fence before descending to a water landing. Now, Steve and Ned walk along a dock while the pilot readies the plane for departure. A moment later, they walk through the compound as the plane flies away. Ned carries luggage. Eleanor greets them by a garden, wearing a wide-brimmed hat and a summer outfit.
Your cat's dead.
What? Which one?
Marmalade. I'm sorry.
What happened?
A rattlesnake bit it in the throat.
God
Damn it, Eleanor. Why do you have to say it like that? You couldn't try to break it a little bit nicer?
She walks away. Ned watches Steve impassively as Steve pulls a bottle and two shot glasses from his pocket.
She's a rich bitch, you know. She was raised by maids. Her parents paid for this island and two of my worst movies.
Steve hands one glass to Ned.
People say she's the brains behind Team Cecil.
He downs his shot.
People say a lot of things. What kind of count was it?
Who gives a shit? I think it was a Tammy.
Ned, want to come inside? We'll make up a room for you. Steve, that reporter called.
While Ned walks to Eleanor, Steve cocks his head and then turns away, a pained expression on his face. Ned pours out his drink. Later, he stands on a ladder and holds out a fish. An orca leaps from the water and eats the fish. At night, a clock reads 2:03 a.m.
Ned, wake up.
Yes.
I'm on the echo box. Push the red button to answer. Throw on your slop and meet me on the beach in 12 minutes.
The white button? Okay.
On the beach, Klaus films the crew while Ned records sound with a boom.
Action. Only twice before have I had the good fortune to observe a rubber tide. That rare occurrence when hundreds of electric jellyfish spontaneously wash onto a beachhead at once. Fabio Gatta brings exactly this to our attention tonight.
Bobby motions to the glowing creatures on the sand.
Steve, what produces this effect of illumination? Is there a chemical inside the organism?
No, Ned. Actually, it's the reflection of the moonlight on their outer membranes. That's a very good ad-lib. Klaus, come over here and get a two-shot of me and Ned. Ned, come in here.
Klaus lines up the shot while Vikram aims a light at Steve and Ned.
Would you like to join my crew?
Would I like to?
I want you on Team Zisu.
I don't think I can do that.
Why not?
Well, it's not my field. I don't have the background for it.
No one here does. Klaus used to be a bus driver. Well, Adarsky was a high school substitute teacher. We're a pack of strays. Don't you get it?
Steve, I'm not even that strong a swimmer.
Klaus lowers the camera.
The answer's yes.
Well, it's got to be. I'll order you a red cap and a Speedo. Cut. Klaus, why aren't you rolling?
Could I have a word with you, please?
Why aren't you getting this?
Steve and Klaus step aside.
That was a goddamn tearjerker. Why did you cut it, man?
Because the sound is going to be shit. He doesn't even know how to hold a boom. He doesn't know diddly check about what we do.
Don't cut unless I say cut.
I've never seen so many electric jellyfish in all my life.
Those are the Yat Kong man of wars.
Everyone turns to see a woman standing silhouetted on the beach, mist blowing past her figure. When Vikram aims his light at her, she's revealed as a beautiful blonde.
Oh, shit, she's right. I guess we'll have to loop that line. Where'd you come from? You look pregnant.
I am pregnant. Not even going to ask what you men are doing out here in your matching pajamas, by the way.
We're producing a film, as a matter of fact. Who are you?
I'm Jane Winsett Richardson. I'm the reporter from the Oceanographic Explorer.
Oh, yeah, sure. How'd you get out here?
I had some drunk in a fishing boat.
Well, that would take 4 hours. Why would you do that?
Because no one picked me up at the effing airport.
Jesus Christ, Klaus. One of my guys was supposed to do that.
Inside.
How long have you been working with Cecil?
Approximately. Only 10 minutes, actually. I was out during the scene on the beach.
He's Steve's son, supposedly.
You are? No, you're not. He doesn't have one.
Well, we're not 100% sure about that yet. We just met yesterday. Not this one, Klaus.
She pops bubble gum.
You heard me. Not this one.
Okay.
In the cutting room.
First thing in the morning, huh?
Sprint everything?
Yeah, tell him to push it a stop and a half.
Okay.
Eleanor approaches.
What are you gonna do with him?
Who? Ned? What do you mean? I don't understand the question.
He follows her to a balcony from which they can see the boat docked in a harbor.
I offered him a spot on the Belafonte.
He didn't take it, did he?
Of course he took it. We're going to put him on the map, Eleanor. We're going to throw him a life preserver.
She walks off.
I believe in this boy.
Why?
Because he looks up to me.
Elsewhere.
Yes, sir.
and McKinnon's willing to take over my shuttle flights. That's right.
Wearing an Air Kentucky t-shirt, Ned stands in an empty hallway, speaking on a phone.
Well, I just feel I need to see this thing through, so...
A light flicks off down the hallway.
Thank you for understanding. I'll check in with the Louisville office again next month.
Now, Ned flicks off a different light and heads into his room. He doesn't close the door. A moment later, he pops his head into the hallway, peering toward the nearby voice. He walks to an open doorway and sees Jane reading aloud while she lies on her bed.
I should not have been, as I was, so especially enamored of their imagined blue.
She notices Ned watching her. He averts his eyes, spins on his heels, and exits.
Hold it.
She rises to her knees, and Ned returns to her doorway.
That's poetry?
No, it's a 6-volume novel.
Mercy, you're going to read that whole thing to yourself out loud.
I'm not reading it to myself. I'm reading it to him.
She pats her pregnant belly. Ned smiles warmly.
When did you learn Zisu was your father? Does it freak you out for me to ask that?
No, it doesn't. But it's a difficult question. I sort of pieced it together over the years.
Well, how did he first contact you?
He didn't. I went looking for him last month after my mother died. She had ovarian cancer, then spread to her stomach and liver. And she took her own life.
Oh.
Well, good night, I guess.
Oh, good night.
He turns to the door, then turns back.
You mind if I stay and listen for a little while?
She studies him for a moment before nodding.
Okay.
He moves the stack of books off the chair by her bed and sits there.
Do you want me to catch you up on the story?
No, I'll be able to figure it out. I'll just catch as catch can.
Morning. Steve opens a box outside.
They made these for about 3.5 years before they terminated my sponsorship.
He extracts a smaller box containing a pair of sneakers branded with the name Zisu. Now Steve hops up and down wearing the sneakers while Jane watches.
These are great.
May I turn this on?
Inside.
Fire one.
He eats an apple. She starts her recorder.
So what happened, in your opinion?
There's an underwater window behind him.
What are you talking about?
Well, don't you think the public perception of your work has significantly altered in the last 5 years?
That's your first question? I thought this was supposed to be a puff piece.
Should we come back to it?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it true that this is going to be your last voyage?
Wow. No comment. Who told you that? No, goddammit. I'm only 52. I might start out with some stock dialogue. You know, favorite color, blue, favorite food, sardines.
How do you feel about part one of your new film?
Why, how do you feel about part one of my new film?
Well, I'm honest, you know, so...
Just say it.
An orca frolics in the window.
I thought aspects of it seemed slightly fake.
Wolodarsky?
I'm
not taking fire.
Vladimir exits the room, leaving them alone.
Did it seem fake? When my best friend was bitten in half right in front of me? Then eaten alive, screaming? I think you're a fake. I think you're a phony. And a bad reporter. How does that feel? Now tell me something. Does this seem fake?
He points a pistol at her.
How dare you? This entire article was my idea. No one else gives a shit.
What about Cy Perlman?
She turns the recorder off.
Are you joking? It's not even covering my expenses.
She turns it back on. Steve studies her. The orca swims outside.
You're taking something out on me.
He points at her. With an agitated look on her face, she turns the recorder off again, then pushes away from the table and turns her back to Steve.
Well, stop crying. What's the deal here? I was only trying to defend myself.
Well, you did a great job. I'm sure you'll make a terrific father.
Night. Ned carries garbage down to a dock until Klaus appears from the shadows to block his way.
So, you really think you're a Zisu?
I don't know.
We traveled a long way for I don't know, Sonny.
That's true. But it's important to me.
Yeah, well... There are a lot of things that are important to some people around here, Sonny.
Klaus, don't call me Sonny.
One more thing.
It's the Steve Zissou show, not the Ned show.
Klaus slaps Ned hard across the face.
You hear me?
Yes, I do.
Klaus!
Well?
If you ever touch me again, I will kick your goddamn teeth out. Is that understood?
Not if I don't see you first, Sonny.
Klaus struts away, shooting a last look back at Ned. Now, Ned sits in his room polishing his shoes as Steve enters and sits by Ned. Steve is shirtless, wearing his knit red cap.
We gotta watch ourselves around this Jane character. Don't tell her anything personal. If you're not sure about something, change the subject and look for me. This Bulldike's got something against us.
I don't think she's a lesbian. She's pregnant.
Bulldikes can get pregnant. Anyway, I back out now, but we need the press. See you in the morning.
Steve.
Hmm?
When did you first hear about me?
About 5 years ago, I read it in an article about myself.
Do you believe it?
It was in the paper. I assumed they'd check their facts.
Why didn't you contact me?
Because I hate fathers, and I never wanted to be one.
Steve exits. Ned resumes polishing his shoes until Steve returns to hand Ned a pair of small blue cardboard boxes.
I forgot. The correspondence doc came in.
Ned opens a box to see stationery that reads, Kingsley, open parentheses, Ned, close parentheses, Zizou. Later, Jane speaks on the phone.
Hi, Ross. Started today. I'll forward some pages to you through the copy department. You're probably right there. What am I doing here? I miss you and... Oh, God, I don't know, Ross. Where are you? Listen, I'm not leaving this message. Don't even know why I'm still pregnant.
In a hallway, Pele plays. Morning. Ned stands outside wearing a Team Zizou uniform as Steve takes his picture with an instant camera.
Script girl uses these for continuity.
Steve extends a gun.
Here.
Oh, no.
No exceptions. Everyone gets one.
Anne-Marie, do the interns get Glocks?
No, they all share one.
Take it, Ned.
Ned obliges.
Hey!
What?
Whack on the echo box.
Steve walks to a nearby intercom.
Zisu here.
Steve, Osiri Draculius on line 2.
Inside.
Yeah?
I spoke with Larry Armin, and it's a pass.
In other words, you fucked us.
Let's not cast stones at one another, my boy. Do you hear me, dammit, do you?
No, I don't! I told you how to play!
Bloody hell! Listen here, mate.
Stand up for a moment!
Ned listens from a doorway.
Who the places is that?
It's me, Ned. Maybe this is nothing, maybe it's something. I don't know your problems. I don't know. But I just inherited $275,000. Would that amount make any difference?
What sort of expression is the lad wearing on his face?
Outside.
Can you fly a chopper?
I have. I'm certainly not licensed in any way, shape, or form.
Great. Let's go.
A helicopter departs the compound. In the cockpit, Ned flies with Steve beside him.
Where was this Whirlbird last service?
I don't know. Klaus is supposed to check it every 6 months.
Text appears. Offices of Osiri Draculius, Osiri Draculius Productions. The offices are palatial with marble walls and grand statuary.
You're back on the water, boys. The wire transfer came straight through from Kentucky, and Jackman and Worsley are going to gap finance the rest. But we have a few hooks on it, so take a pew for a spell. Number one, the bank want a drug screen for everyone on the crew before they forward the money.
A piss test?
Yes, a piss test. Two, a stooge from the bond company will be riding everywhere during the whole shoot to keep you on budget.
Who's the stooge?
A chap by the name of Bill Ubell, and there's not a damn thing you can do about that, Steve. Three, you must swear, legally swear, that you'll not kill that shark, or whatever it is, if it actually exists.
I'm going to fight it, but I'll let it live. What about my dynamite?
Philip Dynamite.
I'm off to Zurich. Follow me, chaps.
His assistant takes a note.
Mr. Ubel, I'd like you to know Steve Zissou and our equity partner, Ned.
Steve and Ned enter an elevator with Bill, the Bond Company stooge. He's a balding, middle-aged man with glasses.
I hope you're not going to bust our chops, Bill. Why would I do that? Because you're a Bond Company stooge.
Well, I'm also a human being.
All right, I take that back.
Yeah. He puts a hand on Bill's shoulder.
Let's have some teamsmanship.
Steve presents his hand. Ned places his palm atop Steve's hand. Bill copies Ned. Then Steve shoots their hands in the air. The three men share a smile. Now, the chopper lands on the Belafonte. Moments later, a launch delivers Steve, Ned, and Bill to shore. Back at the compound, Steve consults a nautical map, using tools including drafting compass, a magnifying glass, and a pen. Now, a view swings past various rooms in the compound as crew members prepare for the voyage. Topless, Anne-Marie preps her gear. Klaus updates the multicolored shooting schedule. Bill does calculations. Vladimir composes music. Vikram shoots a camera test. Renzo examines a sandwich. Eleanor updates a board marked stunt work, crossing out skydive into volcano. The interns do jumping exercises. Bobby plays pinball. Elsewhere, Vladimir motions to Pele, who rushes over carrying a fuse and wearing a mask and snorkel. Dynamite is visible. Vladimir connects the fuse to a plunger and detonates. This triggers an underwater explosion in a nearby harbor, shooting a geyser of water into the air. Now, the crew runs shirtless along the beach, most wearing sidearms strapped over their uniform pants, while Steve leads them riding a bicycle. Ned breaks from the group to visit with Jane. He hands her a sand dollar, which she looks at admiringly. Steve, standing by his bicycle, watches Ned with Jane and wears a confounded expression, before riding over to interrupt their conversation. Ned departs with Steve. Now, Ned dons scuba gear, shoots a thumbs up to Bobby, and drops backward into a water tank. Later, Klaus does chest compressions on Ned.
1, 2, 3,
come on.
Klaus listens to Ned's chest while Steve delivers mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Ned is unconscious next to the tank.
1, 2, 3.
Attaboy. Attaboy. Here he is. Here he is. Come on. You okay, Ned? You okay?
Ned regains consciousness.
All right. All right. Give him some room. He's okay. He just drank a little too much water.
Vikram takes a light reading. Steve looks at him.
How are you shooting this, Vikram? Wide open?
Light 5-6.
Steve strokes Ned's forehead and smiles. At night, Pele and Bobby play foosball. Other crew members, including Ned and Klaus, watch TV. Text appears on TV. Season 3, Episode 14, Trapped in the Ice.
As always, even in the most challenging circumstances, the members of Team Zissou find ways to keep morale high.
On TV, Steve dives from the bow of the ship through a hole carved in Arctic ice. His crew members cheer.
Quiet, hold it. Is that a distress bark?
Steve swims to the edge of the ice hole and looks into the distance.
Is something wounded out there?
We quickly locate the source of the mysterious cry.
On TV, Steve hands a small animal to Esteban.
What is she, Steve? A wild snow mongoose. We thought they were extinct. Her ankle's broken.
Oh, God,
yeah. We're gonna get some hot milk and put these guys in the incubator.
We radio for the emergency transport of our rare, beautiful new friends.
More text appears on TV. Next, a strange visitor.
That's what it used to be like.
Klaus turns to the noise and sees Steve in a doorway, observing his crew members as they watch TV. Steve walks away, then heads into his bedroom while birds fly through the house.
Had Ned's heart stopped beating before you pulled him out of the water?
Had Ned's heart stopped beating before we pulled him out of the water? Yes, but we got him started again pretty quickly.
Don't go on this voyage right now, Steve. One of you's already dead, after all.
Who?
He sits down by Eleanor.
Oh, you mean Esteban? Thanks for bringing that up.
Now, she exits the building while he follows. Crew members carry luggage.
Who's gonna tell us the Latin names of all the fishes and everything? You know I can't remember all that shit. Please stop, Eleanor. Eleanor, stop.
Why are you leaving?
I'm leaving because I don't want to be a part of whatever's going to happen out there.
Nobody knows what's going to happen. And then we film it. That's the whole concept.
It's how we've always done it.
I can't believe you took that boy's money.
He's an investor. He's my sidekick. The sugar crabs are back.
They're early this year. I've never seen them mating before the solstice.
Is that mating?
They watch brightly colored crabs wrestling on the sand, and then two crabs exit, leaving a third one behind.
Bye, Steve.
Don't say that. Even if it's true, don't say that. It's too painful.
What do you want me to say?
Say bon voyage.
She walks to the dock where the seaplane awaits, then turns back to wave at Steve.
Bon voyage.
Now, Steve stands on the dock, watching the plane as the sky fills with the blue of approaching morning. And then he walks back to the compound beneath the stark light of two high lamps. Day. Steve's ship bobs on the ocean, and text appears. Day one, the Belafonte at sea. Pele sits in the observation tower at the bow, strumming his acoustic guitar and singing. In the onboard cutting room, a countdown precedes film footage. In the footage, text appears. Adventure number 12, The Jaguar Shark, Part 2. The footage shows Ned on deck.
Kingsley Ned Zisu, 29, junior grade diving tech, executive producer. Energetic, spirited, youthful.
More text. Figure A, hunting Esteban's killer.
Normally, we would track the Jaguar Shark with the scanning monitor we keep on board the Belafonte. But its power tubes have seized up and blown a gasket.
He activates an overhead projector.
We now proceed to the more advanced system located on a colleague's offshore facility.
A projection illustrates shark tracking gear.
This will be Team Zisu's next stop.
In the footage, Steve nods to Ned. Back in the cutting room, Steve is with Ned, Vikram, and Renzo.
See, Renzo, this is what I'm talking about, a relationship subplot. There's chemistry between us, you know?
Steve nods at Ned. Renzo shrugs. On deck, Steve sits with Jane.
Here's a quote.
Wait up. Who from?
Zisu has an almost magical connection to the life of the sea. He speaks its language fluently. I've never met a boy like that in all my life. Lord Mandrake.
You should have opened with that one.
He was your mentor.
Hey, intern, give me a Campari, will you?
On the rocks?
Steve points and snaps his fingers.
You want to go up in my balloon?
Now, Pele and Klaus look up at a hot air balloon, which is tethered to the ship.
I like her hairdo.
Me too, but Steve called her first.
Seated next to Jane, Steve feeds gas into the balloon.
I'm sorry I made you cry the other day.
Oh, that's okay. It's not completely your fault anyway. I'm going through some personal problems.
Really? What do you got?
Well, I'm 5 months pregnant. My editor's the father. He's married, but not to me.
Wow, that's a rough tipping. You know, my first wife left me when I was your age.
He shows a crossed-out Jack Lean tattoo with Deep Search beneath.
What's Deep Search?
My submarine.
I had this exact image of you tacked up on the wall above my aquarium all through primary school.
Oh, yeah? You mean the official photograph where I'm doing this?
He points.
That's the one.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's just me, but I don't feel like that person.
I never did.
He slips his arm behind Jane and leans to kiss her, but she moves her face away. He retracts his arm and shifts uncomfortably in the balloon's tiny seat. Steve glances behind himself to see the sun setting on the ocean.
Why did you abandon Ned?
I didn't. I never even met him.
She looks away from him, chewing gum. He watches her.
What kind of piece are you writing, Cubby? Are you going to screw us on this deal?
I hope not.
She spits her gum in the ocean, then takes his drink and swigs most of it down before handing the glass back.
You really think it's cool to hit the sauce when you got a bun in the oven? Pele, bring us back down, please.
Later, Steve sits with Vladimir, who operates a music keyboard.
I don't have a problem with objective reporting. What I have a problem with is some wombat coming on my boat trying to railroad me, you know? Let's just see if you can get one of these dolphins to swim under the hull and give us a look.
Vladimir types commands into a computer keyboard. Monitors display feeds from the camera strapped to the dolphins. The animals remain where they are.
Nah, either they can't hear us or they don't understand.
Son of a bitch, I'm sick of these dolphins.
Night. Steve stands on deck with Ned.
Quiet out there tonight. Can you hear the jack whales singing?
Beautiful. I wonder what they're saying.
Well, that was the sludge tanker over there, but there you go. That's them.
By the way, would you mind if I made a few modifications to the Team Zisu insignia? I have some ideas.
You mean the patch?
Yes, insignia.
Yeah, it's probably kind of dated, isn't it? Sure, take a crack at it. Make it a little trendier.
All right.
Are you finding what you were looking for? Out here with me?
I hope so.
I wrote you a letter about 17 years ago.
You mean like a fan letter? Did I write you back? I try to answer as many personally as I can.
Dear Ned Plimpton, first, in answer to your question, always. Second, thank you very much for naming your bug after me. My wife tells me it is actually a type of gnat. You strike me as a very special boy and a key member of the Zisu Society. I wish I could come visit you in Kentucky and assist you with your work. I remember your mother. Take care of yourself, Ned Plimpton. You've served well. Your friend, Captain Steve Zisu, dictated but not read.
Steve holds the old letter, reading the words. His eyes are moist.
Yeah, more or less standard boilerplate, I guess.
Day 5, Operation Hennessy Underwater Sea Laboratory.
There's some real high-tech gear inside this deal, believe me. First we go downstairs and turn on that tracking system. Then, as long as the batteries on that homing dart haven't gone dead...
Who locked us out?
No one, we're trespassing.
Steve, are we allowed in here?
It's the scientific community, man.
Captain, I am required by law to notify the bank of any illegal activities.
Just do what you gotta do to cover your ass, Bill.
Klaus hands Steve a crowbar. As they stand in the rain, Steve breaks the lock on the station's door and pushes it open.
Fuck! They wired it! Klaus, go down and get me some cable snippets.
This is Captain Hennessy. You have trespassed on a private facility. The Coast Guard is being alerted via satellite. Again, this is Captain Hennessy. Immediately leave the premises.
Text reads, Ming dart signal, and an arrow points to a dot on a computer.
Okay, action. Well, look who's back in town. You traveled over 150 miles since we last heard from you. This son of a bitch is heading for the South Pacific. Turn on your tape recorder, Cubby.
Is it the Jaguar Shark?
On the record, yes. Cut.
Print both takes, Vikram.
Was I just in the film?
Yeah. You're gonna have to sign a release.
But you've actually located the shark.
You better butt your fucking ass, we did. All right, everybody. We got about 25 to 30 minutes before the Coast Guard gets here to arrest us. I want you all to get Hennessy's best gear onto the Belafonte in 15.
You're gonna steal his stuff.
Nah, we'll get it back to him. Interns, let's see some hustle.
What is this, Pele?
She shows him a map.
I don't know, the map.
Steve?
Uh-huh.
Do you know that you just charted us on a course through unprotected waters?
Yeah, we're taking a shortcut.
But it's outside IMU jurisdiction. There isn't any
protection.
I know,
honey. Look at the map. We go your way, that's about 4 inches. We go my way, it's an inch and a half. You want to pay for the extra gas?
What kind of system is this?
Oh, it's the other Bernstein 9s. I just upgraded last summer.
The 9s are out already?
Does this do cappuccino?
Yeah.
Wait a second. Steve, this isn't the procedure.
Steve picks up a coffee maker.
Steve, one of the interns just fell down the stairs with the main tracking processor.
All right, just make sure we steal the backup.
Are you listening to me? Eleanor told me that under no
circumstances... Shut up before you jinx us, Anne Marie.
A view rises past the various levels of Hennessy Station, showing the crew members at work. An intern sits with the machine he dropped, and other interns carry gear upstairs. Steve transports the coffee maker. Outside, Bobby fishes off the top deck of the station.
You catching anything?
Steve hands the coffee maker to a curly-haired intern.
Hook this up and make me a latte.
Now, Ned joins Steve on the deck, rain pouring on them.
You know, Cubby's kind of a sucker maker, but she's got some moves.
I agree.
If she wasn't a bull dyke, I think I might have a bit of a thing for her.
Daytime in clear weather. The dolphins swim alongside the bow of the ship as it cuts through water. Inside, Pele works on the engine. Nearby, the rest of the crew, along with Bill and Jane, watch Vladimir operate the stolen equipment.
As you can see, if the creature continues its current migratory route, our paths should converge in less than 4 days.
I want to get there in 3. Well, gotta.
Vladimir, what's this blip right over here? I don't know. I've been trying to figure that out. We might have them both mixed up, or it could be the other way around. But anyway, we're going to be right on top of it first thing in the morning.
Jane nods at Ned.
Good eye, Ned.
Thank you. Should we investigate it?
Yeah, let's make a quick dive at 6 a.m. and we'll scope out the phantom signal. It's probably just one of Hennessy's research turtles.
Yes.
And I want to be back on the road by lunch.
After the meeting, Steve speaks privately with Ned.
Do me a favor. Next time you get a hot idea in front of the reporter, whisper it in my ear first. Otherwise, I look like kind of a daydream Johnny, you know?
In the sauna's hot tub.
You let him change your name?
Well, we changed it together.
What was it before?
Edward Plimpton.
That's a million times better. Change it back, Ned. I really don't see you as a Kingsley Zisu.
Do you think Steve and I have a family resemblance?
She pops her gum.
No.
I guess it doesn't really matter anyway.
Ned reaches to the side of the tub and grabs the sand dollar, which hangs from string. He hands it to Jane.
Here. I stole it back. I strung it on some peppermint dental floss in case you want to wear it like a necklace.
She slips the shell around her neck and smiles at him. Bobby and Pele enter, then hop into the hot tub. Jane slips the necklace under her robe. Later, she discovers that the door of her room has been forced open.
Happy with the piece, Jane?
What are you doing in here?
Am I? No.
He reads her notes.
Put that down.
I assume I'm Mr. Z. I'm sorry that you think my red hat is, what's the word you use? Contrived. And that the Zisu of my childhood represents all the dreams I've come to regret. What? Why?
I'm going to have to start locking my effing door.
It was locked. I kicked it in. Why don't you just curse like other people?
Because I'm trying to get out of the habit before I have my fucking baby.
Okay. That makes sense. Well, please clean up your room anyway. It looks like a goddamn typhoon.
Get out.
She turns away from him. With a sheepish look on his face, Steve slips the red knit cap off his head and looks at it for a moment before walking to the door.
Please don't make fun of me. I just wanted to flirt with you. I'll have an intern come and fix the door.
Inside an Operation Hennessy ship, a computer printer spits out a notice reading, "Attention all hands." A glassy-eyed, Aryan-looking staffer grabs the note and walks through the ship. Now, Hennessy stands on the deck by a pair of giant binoculars as he reads the note.
This is a message from the IMU Coast Guard. Apparently some crooked fuckers broke into my sea lab yesterday.
How awful. Did they nick anything?
It doesn't say. They probably just trashed the place. I'm so pissed. I want to spit. Hugo, tell Carl to load my elephant gun with buckshot.
He looks through the binoculars.
We're going to hunt down these sickos.
Now Steve stands on his deck wearing a wetsuit and a yellow helmet.
Supposedly Cousteau and his cronies invented the idea of putting walkie-talkies into the helmet. But we made ours with a special rabbit ear on the top so we could pipe in some music.
Standing next to him, Jane watches Steve extend the antenna and flick a switch. Once the music starts, he dances to the beat, moving his hips back and forth while bobbing his head. Shortly afterward, Steve and 4 other divers drop from the stern of the Belafonte into the ocean, all wearing radio helmets. Text appears, 6 a.m., investigating the phantom signal. The divers descend alongside the anchor chain, then swim through dense and colorful underwater foliage. Steve leads the team, a flashlight in one hand and a spear gun in the other. He notices a strange creature that looks like a luminescent iguana. Now, the team reaches a steep underwater cliff. Steve aims his light. Ahead of them is the wreckage of a jet plane, with one of its wings torn off. A fish swims up to the plane's black box. Steve turns to his team.
Let's start with the reverse.
Vikram swims out over the cliff and turns his underwater camera toward Steve and the others, who remain near the dense foliage. They swim back to prepare for their entrance.
Okay, roll it, Vikram.
Would it be possible for me to address you as Dad in this scene?
No, why?
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, I forgot. I'm sorry.
Where are you coming from, Chekhov?
Shit. It's not a bad impulse, though. Some kind of nickname. Not that one. It's too specific. But try to think of something else.
Another name?
How about Steezy?
That's good. Try it. What were you going to say before?
Good luck, Steezy.
Fantastic. Let's go.
Steve snaps and points, then leads the team forward. Ned lingers behind a moment before turning to watch Steve.
Okay, action.
Vikram films the team's recreation of discovering the wreckage.
Look, Ned, there's a sunken airplane down there. Let's check it out.
Steve swims into the sunken jet first, followed by the others. Later, back aboard the Belafonte, he records voiceover in the cutting room.
We examine the crash site, but are careful not to disturb the forensic evidence.
How was that?
Not bad. The first take was a little faster.
Elsewhere, Ned descends stairs into a hallway.
Klaus.
Klaus?
Yeah?
I have a word with you, please.
What?
Ned slaps him.
Why'd you do that?
Because I owed you one.
But you gave me a warning already. You stood up for yourself.
I still owed you one.
Now I owe you one.
No, now we even.
Why are you doing this? It's not my fault, so you know I don't have that.
A fuse blows.
What are you talking about?
We're even, damn it. That's it!
Day, the Belafonte cruises the ocean. Text appears. Day 9 in unprotected waters. Now a view shows a boat in the distance filled with people. Steve looks at the boat through binoculars. He lowers the binoculars and shields his eyes to study the boat. Inside, Steve consults a reference book about ships while standing with Klaus and Pele.
No, it was like a beat-up little jalopy. I don't know what you'd call it. You didn't see it?
I didn't see it, boss.
Well, keep your eyes peeled. Klaus, check who's on watch. I'll be in the sauna.
Klaus scans a clipboard.
Pele and... what's the shit is King Sisu?
In Jane's cabin, Ned rests his head against her belly.
Is that him?
Mm-hmm,
that
him.
I've never felt a baby in someone's stomach before.
He leans up to look in her eyes.
I think you'll make a very good single mother.
She pulls her chewing gum from her mouth.
Thanks.
Although it does put you both at a tremendous disadvantage.
She leans forward and they begin kissing. An underwater porthole is visible just behind them. As they become more passionate, Ned pulls away so he can slip off his shirt, and then he lies down. She moves atop him.
You know, Steve's got a little bit of a thing for you.
Why do you say that?
Because he told me.
Really? I thought he hated my guts.
Well, I think you hurt his feelings, but that doesn't mean that...
He says I hurt his feelings. So... effed up.
Now, one of the dolphins with a camera floats into view through the porthole. Its camera catches a view of Jane removing her shirt and kissing Ned. Elsewhere, Steve glances through a cabin window and sees a TV monitor displaying a feed of the dolphin's camera. Steve scowls. On deck, Pele sings and plays guitar, while a shape appears in the mist behind him. It's a small launch filled with people, rapidly approaching the Belafonte.
Five, four, three, two.
The view moves closer to Pele, blocking the launch from sight. A ladder appears, extended up from the launch, and resting on the side of the Belafonte right next to Pele. Now he notices the ladder. Below deck, Steve relaxes in the sauna, then cocks one eye open when he hears the strange noises. Soon, he opens both eyes and listens intently.
Yeah?
Steve, would you please open the door?
Steve slips on his robe and walks to the door of the sauna. He wipes away steam to look through the window in the door. Pirates hold Klaus at gunpoint. His face is bloodied. In Jane's room, Ned lies beside her.
Jane? Is Ned in there?
Shirtless, Ned rises and puts a robe on.
DZ, what's happening? Are those hijackers?
Well, we call them pirates out here, Ned. You were supposed to be on watch, by the way.
Oh my God, you're right.
Ned opens the door. The pirates storm in, pushing Ned back with guns and machetes. Later, Steve, Ned, and Jane are all bound at the wrists and ankles.
So tell me, you were reading to each other in French?
No, it's in English. It was translated.
Well, you know, you're not supposed to go into each other's cabins on a boat.
Why not?
It's just kind of an unwritten maritime rule when you're at sea. Especially the goddamn lookout.
I'm so sorry.
So am I. You hung us out to dry. If we don't handle this right, we're gonna all get murdered. Including her unborn British child.
A pirate enters and whacks Ned in the head. The pirate drags the unconscious Ned across the room.
I'm gonna kill you for that, asshole! I'm gonna hit you so fucking hard, you'll be blind! Please don't hurt him!
Now, pirates train guns on Steve as he climbs onto the deck. Jane follows.
Watch me. I'll let you know when I'm gonna make a move.
Steve, it's way safer for us to just do what they say. They probably just want our money and jewels and shit.
Yeah, then how am I gonna finish my movie then?
Jesus, holy.
He sees more heavily armed pirates.
They're going to kill us, Steve.
All right, I'm patting you on the back right now, Klausy. Don't be scared. I'm going to get us through this, everybody. Oh, God, a como está, pal.
He peers over the side to see Ned, unconscious and bloodied, in the launch.
Wake up, Neto! I'm sorry I yelled at you. I need to speak with the man in charge, fellas.
Steve puts his hand in front of the gun.
Don't point that gun at him. He's an unpaid intern. Vikram, what kind of coverage you get?
I just kept it rolling until they put this hood over my head.
Vikram holds a camera. Nearby, Bill talks to pirates.
Bill speaks their language.
What are they saying, Billy?
Hold on.
Bill's hands are tied, and one of his eyes is blindfolded.
Okay, apparently they're taking a hostage. Obviously, they've chosen Ned.
Hoy! Kibalikan bata!
Now that they've found out that I speak Filipino, they seem to be changing their
minds. Kanin
ito?
Cardiero.
Nasaan ang cardiero? Cardiero? Walang titang cardiero. Do you have a vault? They want to know if there's a vault.
There's no vault.
Our vault contains at least 10 different currencies from all over the world at any given moment, and we are prepared for every kind of financial necessity.
In a flashback, the pirates look at the vault on TV. Back on deck.
There goes Ned's inheritance.
Tell them if they don't get off my boat right now, there's going to be a major shitstorm.
Makinig kayo.
Pirates carry the vault to their launch. A pirate hits Bill. Now he's a prisoner on their launch, too. Steve is blindfolded.
Neto, can you hear me?
He's unconscious.
We'll get you back, Billy.
Is everybody else safe? Anne-Marie, you okay, honey?
No, I'm not. I told you these were unprotected waters.
What a fucking nightmare. Be cool on this shit, okay, Cubby? I mean, at least try to show both sides.
I need to find a baby for this father.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean.
God
said, the captives whisper. Steve raises his wrists to his mouth and chews the ropes, then wiggles his hands to loosen them further.
Here we go.
Steve.
I said, get your ass the
hell off of my boat!
He frees his hands, jumps to his feet, and grabs a pirate's gun hand, moving the gun clear before punching the pirate in the face and tossing him overboard. Using that pirate's gun, Steve charges across the deck, exchanging gunfire with other pirates as the captive crew members duck to avoid getting shot. One pirate holds a machete over the curly-haired intern, and when Steve shoots that pirate, he slashes the machete down, cutting into the intern's shoulder. Now, Steve shoots from the deck of the Belafonte to the other ship. A pirate on the other ship lobs a grenade at the deck of the Belafonte, and it explodes by the mini-sub. Firing wildly at Steve, the pirates on the Belafonte scurry down their ladder to get onto the launch, and then the launch zooms into the ocean as the main pirate ship departs. With smoke filling the air, Steve runs to the observation tower on the bow of the Belafonte and continues firing at the departing pirates until he runs out of ammo. He tosses the empty gun toward the launch, but it falls into the ocean. Steve's shoulders slump. he slowly turns his face back toward the deck of the Belafonte.
I've never seen a bond company stick his neck out like that.
Steve hustles down to the lower deck where his crewmates are lined up by a wall. They kneel with their hands tied behind their backs and blindfolds or bags around their heads.
What's this song? Is that
the Arctic Nightlights, yeah. As if the natural world's been turned upside down. Lord Mandrake.
Pele smiles and chuckles, his head turned toward Steve's voice.
Vikram, get some cutaways of this miracle. Klaus, Ogata, put out the deck fires before we sink.
A three-legged dog limps across the deck.
Those fucking amateurs.
You left your dog, you idiots!
A pirate lies dead on the deck.
Wrap this stiff in a tablecloth. We're going to bury him at sea.
Shouldn't we give him the authorities or something?
No.
I'll write up a few words to read over him.
How you holding up there, intern? Doing okay?
A bandage covers his shoulder. Later, Steve, Jane, and Vladimir are with Ned.
Ned, how many fingers am I holding up?
I don't know. That's not my job. Too many to tell. How many fingers?
He's gonna be just fine.
Night. The Belafonte bobs on the waves. Text appears. Day 14, mutiny on the Belafonte. Anne-Marie speaks to other crew members gathered in the mess.
I believe it's criminal that Steve allowed this to happen to us, by which I mean illegal. We're being led on an illegal suicide mission by a selfish maniac.
I hear what you're saying, but I think you misjudged the guy.
Klaus exits the mess. The next day, he speaks over the dead pirate's body with a crew nearby.
St. Paul said to the Corinthians, without kin, no man may regard himself kindly. Without some...
Holy shit, son of a bitch! Cut.
A gigantic Operation Hennessy ship approaches.
Captain Hennessy, we've got a response to your distress signal. Remain calm, but don't...
Good God, that is Ogata, run downstairs, put a tarp over anything that says Operation Hennessy on it.
What about this guy?
Just throw him over the other side.
Later, Steve meets with Hennessy aboard Hennessy's ship. The three-legged dog sits by Steve's feet.
Your engine blew up and all your fuel's been stolen, is that correct?
Uh-huh.
Well, I certainly know how you feel. Some crooked fuckers just stripped my sea lab, you know.
Probably the same dudes.
I can tow you as far as Port-au-Prince. I'll need your signature on that invoice first that accounts for the expenses of the rescue operation as well as my time and that of my crew.
This is more than the budget of my whole project.
It's an estimate. What's your dog's name?
Steve looks at the dog, which has risen to its feet and begun fidgeting.
Cody.
Hennessy rolls up his newspaper, walks over, and swats Cody on the hindquarters.
Be still, Cody.
Head downturned. Steve watches Hennessy strut back to his ostentatious yellow couch.
I have to run this by my bond company, Stooge.
He's been kidnapped.
That's true. I have to rescue him first.
Sign it now or I'm leaving you out here.
Steve looks down at the document for a moment, and then he pulls a pen from the clipboard and signs. Later.
Oh, I dined with Eleanor last weekend. By the way, she's summering at my villa in West Port-au-Prince, don't you know? Say, how's Team Zisu holding up without her?
Back aboard the Belafonte, Steve kneels on the deck and uses a piece of chalk to draw a line separating the deck into two sections. He climbs atop a piece of equipment.
The first thing that goes through a captain's head when he hears there's low morale going around is...
What'd I do? Is it all my fault? Well, he's probably right. Most of us have been together a long time. There are others that were here before that.
Do you all not like me anymore? I mean... What am I supposed to do? I don't know.
Look, if you're not against me, don't cross this line. If yes, do. I love you all.
Klaus immediately steps over the line. Steve looks at him.
Are you sure?
Yes, I am.
I don't understand. Why?
What do you mean?
Wait a second. What are we doing? You said cross the line if...
Cross the line if you're going to quit.
Oh. Do it again. I misunderstood.
He rejoins the group. Anne-Marie steps over the line. So do most of the interns. Later, Jane's on the phone.
Hi, Ross. I got your corrections on the proofs. They're fine, but... I'm not coming back. It's over. Please don't try to contact me, okay? You'll hear from us sometime.
Her left hand is mostly covered in a bandage.
We got attacked by pirates. I feel as if life is...
She raises her eyebrows, and her mouth twitches briefly.
Well, you get the idea. Anyway, take care of yourself, Jane.
Later.
Will you write to me?
Of course. Give me the address.
Well, actually, I went ahead and stamped and self-addressed 50 or so envelopes just to make it easier for you.
Thanks. I'll use them.
Each one has 3 blank pages in it, and here's a pen.
Maybe I'm going to write you a letter right now.
She smiles at him. He meets her gaze.
Okay.
His shoulders slump, and he casts his eyes downward. She looks at him lovingly, steps forward, and kisses him on the red knit cap that covers his forehead.
I bet I'm going to really miss you, Ned.
I'm going to miss you, too. In fact, I feel like... I don't know, I feel like my heart's almost getting broken. I guess I'm overreacting.
She sits next to him on his cabin's small bed.
Is that really true?
Jane turns to him.
Yes, it is.
Now she's in a hallway.
That was all off the record, Cubby. That whole deal. Actually, I'm surprised you didn't cross the line yourself.
What line?
The line I drew on the deck just now. You weren't up there?
No.
You're kidding. That was one of the most dramatic things that's ever happened on this boat.
A fuse blows.
I just lost all my best interns. I thought you were supposed to be covering this story.
You just said it was all off the record.
Yeah, but you didn't know that.
Lost down here, Becky.
Left the wrong breaker.
So, you are leaving.
You're jumping ship on me.
I'm going to scrap the article.
You mean you're not even going to write the cover story on me? Man, I just don't have any stature anymore.
Sorry, Steve. Everything just got too weird, that's all.
But I gave you a goddamn showstopper up there. Are you sleeping with Ned?
That's none of your business.
Okay. Are you?
No, I'm not.
You're gonna miss the Jaguar shark, or whatever it is, if it actually exists. Are you crying? You cry easily, don't you?
Now, Steve's on the phone.
Bloody hell. God save that poor little stooge. This never would have happened if Eleanor was with us.
Thanks, man.
Your luck had better damn well change soon, mate. Now I must away. I'll send you a postcard from my travels.
What? Wait, where are you going?
Abroad for a spell, my darling. It's my passport status, you see. I'm X9 at the moment. Legally, I'm a fugitive.
Wait a second. They stole my budget. My boat's broken. You're ditching me up the creek? What am I supposed to do here?
Well, I must say nothing's jumping to mind. Philip, any suggestions? No, he's shaking his head.
Aboard Hennessy's ship.
Stand ho! Put him across! Stand ahead!
A Hennessy crewman looks back to see Klaus on the Belafonte.
Ho!
Text appears. Day 20, towed into Port-au-Patois Harbor. The two ships enter a bay. On deck, Steve adjusts his gun holster before addressing the mutinous interns.
No. I can't give you full credit, but I'm not going to flunk you either. You're all getting incompletes.
This is bullshit.
Steve climbs down from the deck into a dinghy where Pele awaits. It's a beautiful day with sunlight glinting off the bright blue water. Now Pele drives the dinghy toward the shore. Steve stands at the bow of the tiny boat, one leg raised so his foot rests on the rail cap. Now he's on dry land, riding alone in the back of an open cab. A bit later, he walks to the wrought iron gate of a residence and holds up crossed fingers. He looks down to see tiny frogs hopping near letters that read, Villa Hennessy. Steve sets his shoulders, waiting, until Eleanor appears behind the bars of the gate.
Oh, shit, what do you want?
Do you mind if I buddy up a little bit before I answer that question?
Yes, I do. Tell me now.
I need some money to get the boat out of hock and rescue my bond company stooge. You got kidnapped. Could we ask your parents to loan it to me?
No.
Okay. Could I go ahead and buddy up anyway? It took me 2.5 hours to get out here.
Inside, Eleanor struts past artwork while Steve trails behind.
Who's that dude?
It's my research assistant, Javier. Javier Rizentos, Steve.
Steve?
Steve shakes hands with Javier, who is a handsome, shirtless young man with long, flowing hair. Among framed photos in the room is one of Eleanor and Hennessy. Javier exits.
You know, I'd be jealous about you staying at Ellie's place, except I always thought he was kind of a closet queer.
A bit later.
So how's your father-son relationship coming along?
Well, nobody has a real lock on any of this, so I don't know how it all times out. I mean, I know I want him to think of me like a father, but the fact that there's an outside chance that he could really be my actual biological son is very difficult for me.
His face crinkles with emotion. He sees a colorful lizard crawling across his hand, then flicks it away.
You know I'm not big on apologizing, so I'll just skip it if it's all the same to you.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I know I haven't been at my best this past decade.
That's true.
Now, he steps onto a balcony at sunset.
What happened to me? Did I lose my talent? Am I ever going to be good again?
I don't know.
Doesn't matter anyway. It's probably the last adventure I got in me. I was hoping to go out in a flash of blazes, but I'll probably just end up going home. Unless you're planning to sell the island.
I wonder how much I could get for it.
In this market? You're probably right all along. We should have had a kid together. Of course, you are kind of already on the edge of being too old. Unless maybe that's a cop-out.
He leans close, lighting his joint with the tip of her cigarette.
It's worse than a cop-out. I was 34.
They look in each other's eyes, the sky awash of soft colors behind them.
It's good to see you, Eleanor.
Now, Steve enters Ned's cabin, where the lights are off, but Ned and Jane are visible on the bed.
I'm about to blow my stack. I turn my back and the bullshit begins. Ned, you're a scumbag.
Steve hits the lights.
And Jane, you're a goddamn liar.
What the fuck are you doing in here?
What the F are you doing in here? I warned you about being in other people's cabins. You were supposed to go home.
Well, you convinced me to stay and finish the story.
Is it still the cover?
I don't fucking know.
Ned hops up to get dressed.
Don't you dare put on that uniform.
It's all I have with me.
I told you I have a bit of a thing for her. Not this one, I said.
You said not this one, Klaus.
So you heard me.
You're too old for me, Steve.
Well, you're pregnant.
I have a word with you privately.
Yes.
They step into the hallway.
Follow me.
Steve leads Ned down the hall, and they enter the sauna.
Are you two fighting?
I'll deal with you later.
They exit the sauna.
Look, Steve, I know we both like her, and you're angry and embarrassed, but leave her out of it.
You think that's what this is about?
Shit, Ned.
What has that bull dyke been telling you?
All right, I'm gonna warn you now. Be a gentleman.
They enter the library.
What are you doing here? I thought all you interns ran out on me.
I want to help you find that shark.
God damn it. Thank you, intern. You're getting an A.
His name's Nico.
Who?
Hello, Vikram.
Give me that camera. I'm gonna smash it over your head. Cut!
Now, they're in the mess.
I misread you, man. I'm gonna have to rethink some shit.
You don't know me. You never wanted to know me. I'm just a character in your film.
They climb upstairs.
It's a documentary. It's all really happening.
Well, damn you for that.
Vikram films the argument.
Go to bed, you sons of bitches.
A bit later, Ned joins Steve atop the control tower.
That pregnant slut's been playing us like a cheap fiddle.
That's it. I'm gonna fight you, Steve.
Steve punches him.
You never say, I'm gonna fight you, Steve. You just smile and act natural, and then you sucker punch him.
You fight your way and I'll fight mine.
Listen, Ned, don't you try to...
Ned punches back. Wiping his lip, Steve straightens.
I think your Team Zisu ring might have caught me on the lip.
Ned pulls the ring off his finger.
You call yourself my son, but I just don't see it. It's nothing personal.
Jane approaches.
What do you want?
She pops her gum and stands behind Ned.
Nothing.
That's so arrogant. That's... screw off.
I can't believe I asked if I could call you Dad. Of course you said no.
I let you call me Stevesy. It sounds better.
It doesn't mean the same thing. A week before she killed herself, my mother told me that you'd known about me since the day I was born. Is that a fact?
That's a fact.
I ought to have stayed in Kentucky where I belong.
Steve turns to see Eleanor on the main deck by Cody.
Quiet! Somebody pay for this water taxi!
The taxi driver waves. Steve turns to Ned.
You got any petty cash on you?
Later, the crew meets in the cargo hold.
Remind me to send Eleanor's parents a thank you note on the good correspondence, Doc.
Okay.
As he touches cash in a case, she closes it.
This is the message we received earlier tonight on our answering machine at Vishuspada Island.
She plugs a phone into a speaker.
Bill Hubel here. I'm on a payphone. I'm still blindfolded. My arms are bound, but a young boy has been kind enough to assist me. There's not much chance I'll get another opportunity to call, so I thought I would ask if... What? No.
Well, thanks for checking in, Bill. Next time, maybe you could let us know where you're at.
Based on the quality of the connection, the variety of wildlife in the background, and the elapsed time between Mr. Ubel's capture and this message, there's a good chance he's on one of the Ping Islands.
She indicates a map.
There used to be a 4-star hotel on Little Ping, but the entire island was destroyed by monsoon 5 years ago. It's been uninhabited ever since.
I know the place. Hotel Citroën. Cubby, I'd like to speak on the record for a moment. Eleanor has always been the brains behind Team Zisu. By the way, are you going to put in a good description of the command center I've set up down here?
She shrugs. He points and snaps.
Okay, gang, that's the plan. Set a course for Ping Island, full speed ahead.
You'll need to hire a team of mechanics to rebuild the engine first, of course.
I know. I'm saying after that.
Just because I've decided to save your neck again and help you do this rescue doesn't mean you've won me back.
Yes, ma'am.
In the command center, Vladimir looks at a tracking blip on a monitor labeled Operation Hennessy. Now, Eleanor serves food to Jane in the mess.
Thanks.
Is the father out of the picture?
Mm-hmm. Actually, I was sort of terrified about having this baby. Right now, I'm not really scared of anything. Maybe it's my hormones.
That makes sense. I'm going to tell you something confidentially, which won't be mentioned again. I'm pretty sure I'm the only person who can say this, including Steve. Never mind how I found out I'm a scientist. It's the thing that puzzles me about Ned's situation.
What is it?
Zisu shoots blanks. I think maybe it's because he spent half his life underwater.
They both glance toward a nearby porthole, through which Ned is visible outside. Now, a view shows Ned looking out at the starry night, a contemplative look on his face. In the cutting room, Paley performs in the sound booth. Renzo sits nearby, monitoring the recording session. Day, the Belafonte cuts through the waves. Text appears. Day 27, rescuing the Bond Company stooge. Now, Steve oversees film editing with his crew.
Let's try track 3 against picture.
Vladimir activates sound and Renzo starts the film. Footage shows Steve in command.
A treacherous reef surrounds the Ping Islands, warning intruders to keep their distance.
Steve talks into a radio and Pele steers.
Today we discover one of its victims off the coast of Ping 3.
An Operation Hennessy ship is partially submerged.
Our colleague Alistair Hennessy and his crew are nowhere to be found. We will land at dawn.
In the cutting room.
Not bad. We'll temper with that anyway.
Now, a battered sign reads Hotel Citrone. Beyond the sign is a beach strewn with hurricane wreckage. Cody runs on shore, and behind him, a figure emerges from the waves. It's a diver in a wetsuit. Soon other divers emerge from the waves, too. There are eight of them in all. Steve is the first to reach the beach, a spear gun balanced against his shoulder. He peels off the hood of his wetsuit and charges forward. Next to arrive is Klaus, who unholsters his gun. The other crew members reach the beach and prepare their equipment. Steve runs up a set of dirt-covered steps and onto a walkway leading away from the beach. His men follow close behind, accompanied by Cody. They pass from the trees into a grassy field where several cows graze, then run forward, a line of palm trees defining the horizon behind their advancing figures. Steve jogs through a puddle, then stops, even though the other men hurry along.
Oh, shit! Swamp leeches, everybody! Check for swamp leeches and pull them off!
Several yards ahead of Steve, the other crew members check their bodies.
Nobody else got hit? I'm the only one? What's the deal?
Now, Steve and his men survey the sprawl of the ruined hotel.
What a shame. They had a bartender here, Kino, made the best rum cannonball I've ever tasted. You ready, Vikram?
Camera on his shoulder. Vikram takes a light reading. He nods.
All right, should we do this?
Still in their wetsuits, the crew jogs along the edge of the hotel's demolished pool, heading for the main building. They hop over the net of an old tennis court. Steve is the first to reach a doorway next to a huge pile of rubble, so he slips inside with Klaus and Ned and the others following him. They scale a flight of stairs. Now, they arrive at the roof. Steve holds his pinky in the air.
The barometer is falling. It's going to rain in 5 minutes. We got to be quick.
But where are they?
Unknown. Split into two groups. I'll take Ned, Ogata, and Wolodarski.
Thanks. Thanks a lot for not picking me.
What? We're smack in the middle of a lightning strike rescue op, Klaus. What's the deal?
I'm sick of being on B-Squad.
Listen, you may be on B-Squad, but you're the B-Squad leader. Don't you know me and Esteban always thought of you as our baby brother?
I've always thought of you two as my dads. Please don't let anyone make fun of me for saying so.
I can't guarantee that, Klausy, but I'll try. Can we get on with the maneuvers now?
Inside.
Wolodarski, you got something?
They sweep through rooms with their guns ready.
Anybody see anybody?
Empty. Klaus, Paris,
sir. I think this whole place is deserted. Shit.
We played a bomb hunch.
Fuck.
Okay, let's not get down on ourselves. We still got two more Ping Islands to check out, except I don't know if we have enough guests to do it. Damn it, Steve. This sucks. I'm disappointed in myself.
From a landing, Steve looks down at the hotel lobby, which is overrun with water, creeping foliage, and animals.
My first wife, Jacqueline, and I spent our honeymoon here.
He turns to Ned, who stands beside him.
Things are pretty different now. All right, let's check out.
He takes a step and then tumbles down a flight of stairs, ending up on the lobby floor. His men run after him.
Did you get that, Vikram?
Yeah.
Good. We'll give them the reality this time. A washed-up old man with no friends, no distribution deal, wife on the rocks, people laughing at him, feeling sorry for himself.
Can I have a word alone with my son, please?
The others disperse while Ned crouches to speak with the supine Steve.
Are you all right?
Not really.
He shifts onto his side, head resting on his hand.
By the way, I've been trying to think of a nickname that might mean the right thing. I came up with Papa Steve.
Ned turns his eyes away for a moment, looking thoughtful, before extending his hand to Steve and helping the older man to his feet.
I'm sorry I never acknowledged your existence all those years. It won't happen again. I mean it.
Ned hands Steve his radio.
You are my son to me. Almost more so. See, for me to meet a guy like you at this time in my life, I don't know. It's just
communicate my feelings to you. But I think I might start to cry.
That's okay.
They turn toward Klaus.
There's something in the coat check.
Steve leads his team through the coat check room to another room, where they discover the bound and gagged Bill. They free him.
Hey, Billy. You okay?
Did you get my message?
Yeah, it was kind of garbled.
Outside, they discover fresh graves where wooden crosses bear Operation Hennessy caps and helmets.
Jesus. These pirates are monsters.
Well, yeah, but remember, I shot one of their guys in the neck last week and killed him, so I think we're okay, too. Where's Cody?
Steve returns to the lobby, looking for the dog.
Cody?
Across the lobby, Cody stands poised outside a door. Steve walks over to the dog, pets it, and slips through the door. Reaching the entrance to another room, Steve finds the pirates sitting around a table playing cards with Hennessy. One of the pirates points at Steve, and the others turn that way.
Steven, are you rescuing me?
Hennessy's face is badly bruised. Steve shrugs in response to the question.
Fold.
A pirate shoots Hennessy in the chest. Other pirates open fire on Steve. He takes cover behind the doorway, reaching his gun around to blast away at the pirates. Now he charges into the room. Outside.
Klaus! Bring the dynamite!
Ned turns a revolving door. Cody slips through, running out of the hotel. Klaus brings dynamite. He and Ned rush inside. The rest of the crew, with Bill, remain outside in the rain. Now, an explosion blasts the front entrance.
They're in there after all! Run! Go! Move now!
Hennessy, blood seeping from his wound, runs out, followed by Steve and Ned. The crew breaks for the trees. They reach a small bridge. Hennessy clutches his wound.
Vikram got some great footage of your boat out there. I guess it's total, huh? Perhaps. We're extremely well insured. I'll probably come out ahead in the end. Although we'll obviously have to crew up from scratch next time. They made soup out of my research turtles.
Pirates emerge from the jungle to fire on Steve's people, who take cover and shoot back. Pele gets hit.
Ogata, give some first aid to Pele!
Klausy! Meadow! Dig in here and hold these weapons off while I call in the rendezvous! We'll meet on the beach! Your A squad!
Klaus acknowledges. On the beach.
Renzo! 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 Anybody, hello! Hello! This kid's going out of juice.
He tosses his radio to Vladimir, who examines it before tossing it to the ground.
Thanks.
Bill catches up to Steve, who spots a boy on the beach cooking meat over a spit. Steve aims his spear gun.
No, Captain! That's Cedric. He's a friend.
The boy waves.
Merci, Cedric. Remind me, we'll send him a red cap and a speedo.
Steve's group jogs toward a dock.
Wolodarski! Go get the keys to that fishing boat and throw them in the water! No, wait, they might have another set. Just blow it up!
The other group rejoins them, and they all board a boat.
Hey, Ned! It looks like we recovered your inheritance.
He heads for his vault.
Klausy!
Steve tosses his gun to Klaus, then leans down to unlock the vault. It's empty, with a giant hole cut in the back. Ned steps behind the vault, looks through the hole, and sees Steve.
That's it. I'm retired.
Steve and Ned sit at the bow of the small boat as it cuts through a narrow waterway, with the ocean in sight just ahead. Behind them, a pirate boat explodes. Bobby steers Steve's boat. Vikram films the island. A view shows the three-legged dog moving through shallow water.
Oh no, we forgot Cody! We gotta go back!
The crew wears unenthusiastic expressions. Vladimir shakes his head. Meanwhile, the dog runs along a rocky shore.
Goodbye, Cody.
Eleanor approaches in a dinghy piloted by the curly-haired intern, with a trained dolphin swimming alongside. She waves. Steve regards her. Now, the Belafonte chugs through the water on a clear day, leaving a wide wake in the blue-green waves. Ned stands on the deck, showing something to Steve and Klaus.
See, this represents the Belafonte, and here's Pescepata Island. And that circle represents friendship, and the K here stands for Klaus.
Where's your symbol, Ned?
Well, I didn't want to impose myself.
Klaus is right. The flag needs a Ned symbol.
Well, I suppose we could put an N on the side of that octopus.
What's that stand for over there?
That's Esteban.
Below.
I was working okay until late last night, but now the whole tracking system's gone completely on the fritz.
Screw it. We'll sell it for scrap along with the boat and the submarines. I'm going home.
Let's take up the whirlybird and see what we find out there anyway. I got a feeling we can spot this fish from 111 feet up.
Ned, I don't know if I ever even saw the bastard.
Ned yanks his arm.
I have $275,000 invested in this damn production. Something ate Esteban, didn't it? Now lead! Right?
Ned puts his hand out.
Oh!
He yanks it back. A short distance away, Klaus watches. Ned extends his hand again. Steve places his on top, and they do their cheer. Now, Ned dresses in a Team Zizou flight suit. A note is slipped under his door. A bit later, he reads it while walking along the deck. It's from Jane. Ned and Steve approach the chopper.
You can freeze like a 30-century man.
What's that?
Letter from Jane.
What does she say?
Nothing to speak of.
He waves to Jane, who is on deck chewing gum. She waves back. Bill toasts his mug and Hennessy salutes. Now Steve and Ned are inside the chopper. Klaus stands outside.
Thank you for putting me on the flag, Ned.
Of course, Klaus. It was my pleasure.
Yeah, but you stitched me onto the Dolphin, and I want you to know how much that means to me.
Well, I'm very pleased you liked it.
You're not listening. I didn't just like it.
Klaus straightens his posture and salutes Ned.
You understand?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Klaus.
Ned returns the salute. Klaus exits. Now the chopper flies over the ocean. Text appears. 12 noon, the Jaguar shark. Steve scans the waves with binoculars while Ned flies.
I've still got yours, of course. About what?
Steve holds up an old letter. Ned takes it, looks at Steve, and reads.
Dear Captain Zisu, I am 12 years old and live in Jawbone, Kentucky. A creek runs behind our house where I live with my mother. She met you once some years ago, and I collect and catalog amphibians, reptiles, and insects. I don't know what this one is called, so I named it myself. You are probably my one of, if not the favorite person I've ever studied. I plan to be either A, an oceanographer, B, an architect, C, a pilot. Thank you very much for your good work. Sincerely, Ned Plimpton, Blue Star Cadet, Zisu Society. P.S. Do you ever wish you could breathe underwater?
In the chopper, the men share a look.
I still wish I could breathe underwater.
Me too, Ned.
Steve spots a school of fish swimming just below the surface.
Fluorescent snapper!
What?
Really? What's that?
A good sign.
The last time we saw that big shit kicker here...
The chopper rocks. The men exchange concerned looks, and Steve glances toward the sharp noise.
Something popped up there, didn't it?
I heard a pin snap loose in the rotator mechanism.
Smoke fills the cockpit. Oil splashes the canopy. Ned clutches the joystick. Glass cracks.
This is gonna hurt.
He places his arm across Ned's chest as the helicopter tumbles straight down toward the water. Underwater bubbles, a flash of red, bubbles, a flash of white, red again. A view of Ned raising his hand at the premiere, bubbles, red. Steve breaks the surface, wreckage burning nearby.
Ned! Ned!
Beyond Steve's view, Ned clings to an inflated life raft.
Ned!
Hey, Stevesy.
His face is bloodied, and his expression is distant. Steve swims over and grabs hold of the raft.
Are you okay?
Steve removes Ned's helmet.
Hey, I'm okay.
Blood colors the water.
What happened? Did we hit something?
Most likely not. That may be the push rod failed.
I'm sorry, Ned. I should have scrapped this chopper 10 years ago.
You know, maybe I should have auto-rotated and performed a high bank through our descent. We might have crashed a little softer. That wouldn't have made any difference, though.
He goes limp, his hand slipping off the raft. His eyes close. Ned's face slips beneath the water. Steve holds him. Now Steve carries Ned's body from the water to a sandy shore. He sets the body down and holds Ned for a moment, then rises to his knees and looks around the beach, with smoke and pieces of helicopter wreckage surrounding him.
Should I try to?
Now, a view moves closer to the Belafonte, resting still on the water, with a group of people gathered on deck. Two seaplanes float next to the ship. Klaus reads over Ned's coffin.
That you would try to love me too in your mind.
An Air Kentucky representative places a cap on the coffin, which is draped with a Team Zizou flag. Jane walks to the coffin and pulls a bundle of letters wrapped in ribbon from her pocket. She slips the letters into the coffin, her expression pained. Steve, his head bandaged and his brow furrowed, steps forward. Three Air Kentucky representatives join Steve, Klaus, and Draculius as pallbearers. They guide the coffin to the railing and carefully tip it over the side so it falls into the ocean.
I can tell the way you smile. If I feel that I could be certain, then I would say the things I want to say tonight.
Below the surface, Eleanor sits in the observation bubble, watching Ned's coffin drift downward through the water.
I'll keep trying to hide the way I feel inside.
On deck, Pele plays guitar and sings while Renzo records him.
When I leave my dreams, para onde foi meu sonho? Para onde ele decidiu mudar? Será que ele partiu para outro mundo, eu suponho?
Nearby, Eleanor sits in a cabin, dabbing her eyes with a handkerchief. Steve and Klaus watch her.
This is the first time Eleanor's ever cried in front of me as long as I've known her. Except for once when she got her arm caught in the deck winch.
Hennessy examines a coffee maker.
Is this my espresso machine? How did you get my espresso machine?
Bill is next to him.
Well, you fucking stole it, man.
Hennessy and Steve approach Eleanor.
Allie, why don't you go powder your nose? I need to talk to your ex-wife.
Hennessy holds up a finger, then pulls Steve aside and puts his hands on his hips, facing Steve.
We've never made great husbands, have we? Of course, I have a good excuse. I'm part gay.
Supposedly everyone is.
Hennessy embraces Steve. They hold each other for a moment before Hennessy drifts away down a hallway. Steve takes a seat by Eleanor.
I never told you this, but I was hoping we might get the chance to adopt Ned. I think he would have wanted it that way. Would you go along with me on that?
He was 30, Steve, but I'd have considered it.
Thanks, Eleanor.
Later.
We're a dying breed.
Yeah.
He's with Draculius on deck.
I guess we were all right while we lasted, though, weren't we?
Oh, we were like Glory's Gate, my darling. We were like that bloody shark of yours. We swam with the, God damn it. I had it on the plane. What was I going to say? Oh, well, it's good to see you.
How's your passport status?
Much better, thank you. I'm back down to X4. Tell me, who knocked up the reporter?
I don't know.
Now, Steve takes a seat beside Jane. She has a deflated look on her face.
By the way, thanks for showing me the first draft.
You read it. What did you think?
Well, I was a little embarrassed at first. Obviously, people are going to think I'm a showboat and a little bit of a prick. But then I realized that's me. I said those things. I did those things. I can live with that.
She smiles.
You're a good writer, Jane.
It's the effing cover.
He grins at her.
That girl.
Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we've just got the scanning monitor back up, and it looks like the Jaguar shark or whatever it is that we're tracking is in a trench on the far side of the reef.
Steve heads to a door. A fuse blows, briefly throwing the gathered crew into darkness.
What the hell is going on?
Steve bangs on a wall. The lights kick back on. Everyone turns to Steve.
Anybody feel like going for a ride?
Now he pilots the mini-sub. With him are Draculius, Eleanor, Vladimir, Bill, the curly-haired intern, Pele, Hennessy, Jane, Vikram, Renzo, and Klaus. Steve activates a tape machine.
Ned's theme, take one.
A sign under it reads, no more than 6 passengers permitted at any time.
I hooked a rhinestone bluefin on a rope to give him something to eat.
Outside, the body of a large fish trails behind the submersible, which descends into an underwater ravine. Now, Steve operates controls. Through the windshield, a manta ray is visible swimming past the mini-sub. Draculius peers through a porthole to see an octopus spew a cloud of ink into the water. Klaus looks through another porthole at a brown fish swimming by a group of smaller fish with translucent fins. Through his window, Vikram sees pointy fish probing underwater plants. Hennessy looks through a porthole.
Is that one of mine? I think one of my research turtles survived.
A sea turtle with high-tech equipment attached to its head and shell swims alongside the mini-sub. Steve smiles at Eleanor. Ahead of the boat, spiky fish swim. Now the sub moves into a large, dark underwater trench, its headlights cutting beams into the thick shadows. The sub comes to rest just above the ocean floor, the bait fish still dangling behind. Steve deactivates the exterior lights. Now, he pulls a notebook from his breast pocket and checks data labeled shark location coordinates. Vladimir holds up a calculator, presenting numbers that Steve cross-references.
Yeah, looks good.
Steve squints to see into the darkness of the water ahead of the sub. The view seems tranquil. In the trench, the mini-sub bobs peacefully above the ocean floor. Suddenly, the school of translucent snapper fish appears before the sub, shooting past the windshield in all directions. Their movement rattles the sub slightly, and the crew members expectantly watch the fish pass by. From the darkness, a pinpoint of light appears. It flashes red as it comes closer. Steve watches, his face resolute. Slowly, the shape of a shark becomes visible. Its fins are speckled with dots that reflect light, so the groupings of dots sway in the water while a shark nears. Steve's expression conveys awe and fear, while some crew members watch with their mouths agape. Vikram captures the moment on film. Now, the shark is fully visible. Its jaws are awesome, and its massive body is speckled with yellow and black dots, recalling the pattern of a jaguar's hide. It swims over the mini-sub, its length far exceeding the size of the ship.
Is that him? That's him, Klaus.
Outside the mini-sub, the gigantic shark swims around the trench. When it chomps down on the bait fish, the jaguar shark's body dwarfs the mini-sub. The action of the bite causes the shark's body to knock the top of the submersible, rattling everyone inside. His body rigid with tension, Steve rights the ship.
Are we safe in here?
I doubt it. You still want to blow him up?
No, we're out of dynamite anyway.
Eleanor smiles.
It is beautiful, Steve.
Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it? I wonder if it remembers me.
Steve's face tightens with emotion. His mouth quivers. Eleanor puts a reassuring hand on his shoulder. Jane does the same. Soon everyone touches Steve's shoulders all at once. Steve pulls a hand off the steering wheel to clutch Jane's belly. She puts her hand atop his.
12 years. 11 and a half.
That was my favorite age.
He smiles at her, though his expression remains wistful. Through the windshield, the shark can be seen swimming away. Vikram films the end of the encounter. Now, a film is projected on a screen. The footage shows Ned standing next to Steve and pointing, with Jane alongside.
Like this? Just like that.
You do it too.
Steve points.
We complete the adventure. But another member of our crew has been lost.
The Zizu insignia.
This one was my son. Also our equity partner. We start the voyage home in our wounded vessel.
Text appears. In memory, Ned Kingsley Plimpton Zizu. Now a view shows Jane holding her baby, watching the film. The baby wears a Team Zizou uniform. In the theater box below Jane, Trakulius and Steve's crew watch the movie. The box's center chair is empty. Outside, Steve sits on the red carpet, wearing a tuxedo and his red knit cap. His expression is reflective. Fans stand a short distance away behind security gates. An award sits on the ground beside Steve. Fans take photos of him, but he seems oblivious to their presence. Now the theater doors open and Klaus's little nephew, Werner, emerges. The boy walks to Steve and takes a seat beside him on the carpet. Steve digs into the breast pocket of his tuxedo, which is adorned with medals, and extracts something. He hands it to Werner. It's the Zizou Society ring. Werner slips it onto his finger. The boy and Steve look at each other.
Oh. Oh.
Steve looks from the boy to the distance ahead of him. He blinks rapidly several times, his eyes glassy.
This is an adventure.
He turns toward the sound to see people exiting the theater, and then he stands, lifts Werner, and sets the boy onto his shoulders. He starts walking down red carpeted stairs. A huge procession forms behind Steve and Werner. Everyone is dressed beautifully, and the classically European alleyway is decorated with lights and candles. The view changes to slow motion. Steve holds the boy's feet for safety, and Werner has his arms wrapped around Steve's neck. Dozens of people follow them.
I'm up on the 11th floor and I'm watching the cruisers below.
Still in slow motion, Steve reaches the street with Werner on his shoulders. He walks past rows of photographers whose cameras flash as they take pictures.
Oh, my heart's in the basement. My weekends are at an all-time low. Cause she's hoping to score, so I can't see her letting him go.
As the closing credits begin, the image snaps into regular motion. Steve continues walking with Werner on his shoulders.
She's so squishy in her satin tan. In her frock coat and bibbidi-bobbidi hat. Oh God, I could do better than that. Oh yeah. She's an old-time ambassador, sweet-talking, night-walking games. Oh, and she's known in the darkest clubs for pushing ahead of the dames.
Credits continue as the view shifts to daytime. Steve jogs into view on a dock, with boats and cranes visible across a bay behind him. Werner jogs alongside. They slow to a walk. Klaus comes into view. He and Steve pump their fists at each other. Klaus walks behind Steve and Werner. Now, Vikram joins the procession, followed by Vladimir and Pele. The group passes Bobby, who is throwing stones into the bay. Bobby falls into line behind the others. They continue walking. The curly-haired intern is next. He slips on a red knit cap. The group passes Renzo, who holds his boom mic. Everyone wears a Team Zizou uniform, even little Werner. Steve salutes Bill, who is in civilian clothes. He beams a proud smile and begins walking with the group. Draculius, wearing a suit, joins the procession shortly afterward. Now, Hennessy and Eleanor enter the formation. She puts her arms around Steve. A view shows the Belafonte docked. The crew arrives at the boat and climbs aboard. Steve leads the crew toward the upper deck, and they congregate near the bow, while Draculius and Hennessy scale a ladder and take places on the control tower. Seen from afar, a figure stands atop the control tower's highest deck, smoking a pipe.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, a view shows Pele on the stage from the premiere, with the ornate backdrop behind him. He performs.
Betinho tem uma proposta indecorosa de fazer Quero que você venha comigo, nega. Você vê. É um lugar super interessante pra gente crescer. Enquanto a gente espera visita, nossa cegonha, no nosso bebê. Porque segundo, não vou trabalhar. Quero subir pra conferir. Eu tô querendo mudar daqui. Tenho certeza que você vai adorar, nega, o nosso terreno. Tem tudo pra ficar grande, grande, mas vamos começar pequeno. As frutas do pomar, a criançada brincar com você. Enquanto a gente espera a visita da cegonha, trazendo o nosso novo bebê. Porque eu quero viajar, eu quero sair, sair daqui. Vou comemorar quando eu conseguir. Preta, vamos lá, eu quero sair. Segura, não vou trabalhar. Quero subir pra conferir. Eu tô querendo mudar daqui. Depois resolver nossa glória. E vai haver aquele que implore pra ser feliz. As frutas no pomar, a criança brincar com você. E a gente esperança cegonha trazer de novo o nosso novo bebê. Porque eu quero viajar, eu quero sair, sair daqui. E vou comemorar quando eu conseguir. Preta, vamos nessa, eu quero poder viajar, ficar com você. Segunda, não vou trabalhar. Quero subir pra conferir. Eu tô querendo mudar daqui. Mudar com você. Mudar daqui. Com você. Mudar com você. Sei lá, qualquer lugar. Guarapari, porque eu quero mudar. Mudar com você. Eu quero estudar.